Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest and our guest, Janice Dickinson. Waiting for this.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
It is our 99th episode, Bob, believe it or not.
99.
Yeah, crazy.
Bob's, number nine.
Yeah. Bob, Janice, Bob barely made it here this time because he thought he was going to die.
I really did.
What happened?
I got pneumonia, and I'm not big on keeping track of, you know, I'm
healthcare.
I'm a different generation. I'm not a computer person. Like,
no,
I have Kaiser.
Neither am I.
I have Kaiser. If you don't know how to work a computer, you're just going to die.
That's really bad.
You have to send emails and like.
No,
I don't
but you
even
have a
know.
Temperature.
I don't even know how to
you
copy
don't look
an
sick.
Email. No, I was sick 3 weeks ago. I was so sick. I was in and out. So I just paid cash going to an urgent care. Turns out. Urgent cares can't help you. It's just a bunch of students. I didn't know. It's right next to a hospital.
You should have gone to Minute Clinic at CVS. I'm serious.
It would have been just about – listen, you need – it was a case in point of people not understanding. Forget how to fund the healthcare, how it works. You must have a primary care doctor. That physician
–
I married
Kaiser,
one.
But at Kaiser, it's so hard. You don't even know who you're talking to. It really is. I mean, I like the system. If you're healthy.
Do you have a Kaiser doctor?
I still don't know.
Okay, see, you need to have a doctor.
Why do you not utilize what's at arm's length? Dr. Drew Pinsky is one of the greatest doctors. He's my doctor.
I can't be
his doctor. He's my friend. I can't have a dual relationship.
But he was guiding me. He was saying, get in front of a doctor.
I kept saying, dude, don't go to the emergency room. Go see a doctor and let him or her take care of you.
Tell him what you said. Listen, I literally... this went on for like 8 days, Janice. On one night, I really realized, so I'm Googling, and a lot of people in their 50s and 60s die of pneumonia. And I'm like, so I call my business partners and I say, listen, if something happens, this is what I want to happen. And my partner, Evan, was like, what the hell's going on? And I was like, I don't know, but I just know that I'm not getting better. I haven't been getting better. I'm taking all kinds of medicine. Not getting better. And Drew keeps saying, get in front of a doctor. Let a doctor have eyes and ears on you.
Yeah, let them do their job. Yeah.
So right, but I'm right. ignoring that. I'm right. just going to the urgent care emergency room. So finally, after I thought I was going to die and then I didn't die, 2 more days, I was so ill. I couldn't breathe.
What was your temperature?
Like 101, 102.
I had 104.
But get this. So I go to this doctor's office. I decide I'm going to go to the most expensive doctor in my area of the
Beverly
Empire.
Hills, Bob Forrest.
No, I live in the IE. So I go.
Inland Empire.
And I'm coughing and all this kind of stuff. And a doctor, I've been there about 30 minutes. A doctor peeks his head in the room I'm in. He goes, do you have asthma?
Oh, my God.
And I said, no. And he goes, okay, be with you in a minute. And he shut the door. And so then he came in and within – like 3 minutes, he diagnosed me, gave me what I needed. I got better by the next night.
Did they hospitalize you?
No, he didn't need it. He needed a physician to use his or her judgment to apply their judgment.
And his judgment
to his case.
Was.
Then
that
you really didn't have
his
pneumonia.
His judgment
no, he did.
Was that my coughing from the pneumonia was causing me to have
post-bronchitic bronchospasm.
Yeah, there you go.
Your post-prosthetic bronchospasm comes from all the help you
but
go
you
to at night
die.
During the rock shows and all your artists, you know, that are friends that you take care of.
But the truth is that I just wasn't listening, which a lot of Americans don't do.
Night air really gets the lungs.
Look, you need a primary care doctor because that doctor will know how to navigate the system. And I was thinking about this when I was thinking about you. Bob went off on Facebook and I'm like, dude, you need to see a primary care doctor. And so even if you see a subspecialist, right? Let's say you have joint pain, you go see a rheumatologist. Don't do that because that consult needs to be interpreted by somebody.
Okay.
A primary care doctor needs to take that consult and interpret it in the context of your overall health care. That when you're a hammer, sometimes the whole world's a nail, right?
Got it.
So you see consultants, you're going to get hammered because you're going to be a nail. You know, they may get it right. They may get it exactly. And if you are actually in a condition is their area of expertise, again, then your primary care doctor can send you back and get information and get more treatments. But somebody who knows how this works.
I have a lady that is like a brute. I mean, she takes so much time with me. She's up at UCLA and she, you know.
Can you see her and get a hold of her?
I can.
If you can't get a hold of her.
They have assistants.
Look at how frustrated Drew gets with me.
Here's what gets me. Bob, here, let me present this case to you. Hi, my son's 23. He's actively suicidal. He's on Zoloft and Abilify, and he's going to kill himself right now. I don't know what to do. I've tried everything. I need you to see him right away. What's your first question?
You need to call 911 if he's really going to kill himself.
Yeah, yes, but what else do you want to know about his?
Is he a drug addict?
No. Who's prescribing the Zoloft and the Abilify? Because that person is responsible for every second of that kid's well-being.
I think I always bypass authority.
Right.
That's your problem.
And so you need to call that doctor. Bob, listen to me.
I was really literally wanted Kaiser Foundation to shut down because they didn't help me.
So Bob, you need to call that doctor. And if he or she doesn't answer, they are responsible to have somebody else to take that call to respond to you and take the responsibility that they've accepted it from then on. They are the responsible party, not somebody on Facebook. That doctor is responsible from then on.
There were doctors on Facebook giving me IM messages and what to do also.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. Well, that's problematic.
Unbelievable.
All right.
So anyway, I almost died and now I'm back. So I'm here. You're alive. I'm alive.
No, but Bob, now you don't have any lives left because
I know.
You've been through all the stories we've heard about you that you're famous for, from. You know, walking the line.
Janice Dickinson, the first supermodel.
That's me.
That's her.
What else don't people know about Janice Dickinson?
Oh, I'm a grandmother.
Grandmother now.
I just got
married. We went to her wedding. Were you at the wedding, Bob?
No.
I'm sorry.
It was all right.
We just finished telling somebody last night. Was it Jason Waller?
It was the best,
funnest wedding we've ever been to. The funnest ceremony we've ever been to.
You know, I feel bad because I should have invited him, but we had such a very small, arena to get married. But I was thinking on the way over here today to do This Is Life, and all the people you really saved and helped, the two of you. You know, myself, I can say that I'm like happily married.
Shelley helped you.
The team really did because, you know, you prescribed, you listened, you put up, but Shelley put up with it day by day, you know, and stringing me along and getting me to class, AA meetings, and really guiding me to a better way of life. And I want to thank you for it.
We had the good team. We were a team, a real team like the old school
teams.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
And whoever the client attached with, the rest of us would back away because now we have one person who now has
control.
But
understand that our personality structures, each one of us was like a lock. And let's say the patient is a key.
Sasha, too.
Sasha, we had Louisha.
That's what I'm saying.
We have all these different teammates. And always somebody would fit with the patient.
Jason Davis fit with me. I don't know why.
He liked you.
It's true.
He liked you. He would listen to me. He admired Drew, but he was drawn to you. He called you Waldo.
Yep.
You were Waldo.
He calls everybody names, but he listened to me.
But he did. But you did save his life. You know.
You have any contact with Jason lately?
I see him from time to time. He's still alive. I don't know how he does it, but he's doing it.
Well, there's so many people that were on the show that are still alive. It's amazing. When Dennis Rodman was in North Korea, what were you thinking?
I was thinking they must be having a hell of a time. You know, I mean, can you imagine Rodman is the only American that's allowed in North Korea to hang out with young you know, and he's a recipient of celebrity rehab.
Celebrity rehab guys over talking to Kim Jong-un when no other Americans can.
And then, wait a minute, we're not finished. Phillips.
Mackenzie's a counselor.
Mackenzie Phillips is doing amazing, and she's saving lives. I'm not saving lives. I'm shaping them with my grandchildren, which I'm really happy
about. And your kids, too.
My two children are doing – my son's getting married to his fiancée, Carly Lewis, Nathan Fields.
Awesome.
And they'll be getting married in Punta Mita in November.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm very
fun.
Excited about that. Destination wedding. Mm.
So what – are you still living over off the 405?
No.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I Right.
Because the 405 is such a nightmare.
It is. All traffic is a nightmare. I just really, after I'm sorry, I can't talk about Trump, but I'm going to. After Trump got into office, I just really want to move to Europe. I do. I can't do it.
They got traffic in Europe, too. But
no, but I want to be on a sailboat.
She lived in a part of L.A. where you can't get there from here. You just can't.
I know.
The 405 in Mulholland. You might as well just live in Bakersfield. No one can go visit you.
Oh, this is worse. I'm living in Tarzana.
Oh, perfect.
Tarzan? No, that's not perfect.
Why not?
Because I'm living in, like, this summer, for example, it was like 125 degrees on my street. And I'm out there trying to water some wilting avocado plant. And it was like, where am I? You know, I used to have a breeze and now I'm out here. But you know what? I'd live in a treehouse with my husband if he wanted me to. But he can't be listening because next I'll be living in Joshua Tree.
But that's why she was a trooper. She was going from the 405 in Mulholland to Hollywood and Vine every day.
That's true.
For your treatment.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
Well, I really
Very
wanted it.
Few people will it. Do that.
Well, you helped me kick pills. That was the big deal. My thing was pills and sleeping pills. And I really do believe that
well,
I was
let's get at that a little bit.
Hooked on those and not realizing
hooked.
It was
You
hooked.
Were not realizing it. You were hooked. Remember that horrible withdrawal you went through? Yeah, it was terrible.
God,
but now do you understand that that drug, those drugs are the hidden they're the hidden epidemic right now.
They are so
People are
powerful.
Understanding that about the opiates, right? But if you're going to take an opiate and die, it's because you're also taking a benzodiazepine. That's the combo that kills people.
And the benzos are all generic. They cost 10 cents. Kids eat them like candy.
Okay, so dude, how does your narrative about the evil drug companies fit into that narrative?
Go on, because I want to know what almost killed me.
OxyContin is an evil empire.
Why isn't Klonopin and Xanax and
Ativan,
which was Janice's, why aren't those terrible?
Ativan, I was thinking
Well, they do come up with new ones that they want to make money off.
They don't. You don't get
Ambien.
Them.
Ambien's the worst.
You don't get them, Bob. You don't have to because you got all these other ones for nickels.
I know.
How does that fit your narrative about the drug companies?
It's only one drug company that's evil. It's called Purdue Pharma.
That's the OxyContin guys.
Yeah. Okay. And they knew what they were going to cause. They caused it. And they seem to be getting away scot-free because now that OxyContin wrought on our society is now heroin addiction. So then a bunch of heroin addicts die. That's on them. That's their fault. Nothing to do with big pharma.
That is the narrative. Or not, how about my profession? It's rolling all this.
Funny, even driving in the car, you see like this electronic billboard saying, even if you're buzzed, you're going to get a DUI.
Buzzed driving, yeah. Buzz driving. There was an estimate that 1 in 5 California drivers are either stoned or high.
For sure.
One in five.
I saw higher numbers than that.
1 in 5.
For sure.
Think about it. Of course.
Think about
course.
Being high. For example, last night I was
Doesn't
at the-
Doesn't that worry you a bit?
I know it's true.
I had a contact high last night at the Green Day concert. I'm stone cold sober. I've been sober since the show.
Yeah.
I walked in and I was my friend Steven, I left my husband home. He wouldn't have liked it. It was too loud for him. But he did take me to an Eminem concert. Same thing. As soon as these rock stars come on stage.
Well, especially Eminem. There's a lot of weed at that show.
The whole entire Rose Bowl was a nitrogen bomb of marijuana smoke.
How about this? I played a show in Long Beach. Were you there, Nate, at that street scene? I was walking down the street before we played, just walking around this street scene in Long Beach. There were kids with pit bull dogs smoking weed. Talking with cops, with Long Beach police cops, joking around in downtown Long Beach.
It's all legal. It's all legal.
It's all legal.
It's the LBC, man. It's his medicine. You can't tell me about my medicine.
But what about cops just laughing and being friendly, community relations?
What are they going to do? What are they going to do?
I don't know. Everyone should get hooked on Hydrolite because I've been sipping effervescent electrolyte tablets for the past 45 minutes, and I feel good.
Susan, any... anything on Facebook Live there?
This did save me when I was sick. I was drinking these
all
the time.
I'm telling you, I'm just completely dehydrated as a woman because I talk too much. And these really help saturate your quenching of thirst.
Let's go back in time to the great grand 1970s at the Fifth Studio 54. Mm. Was it as crazy as it seemed?
It was
amazing.
It was the mecca of hedonism.
See, Drew doesn't like the 70s, and I kind of am fond of the 70s.
Why? They were amazing. Are you kidding? I was out every night partying on down and shooting Vogue covers during the day. I don't know how we did it, but...
Was it fun, though? Were people friendly and kind?
It was kind to me because I had a job. I had a day job.
Have you seen the new show, The Deuce?
No, I've got to watch it. I'm going to binge watch it.
That is what it felt like in the 70s. It's an exact...
I was alive in the 70s.
But
the 70s.
You were in Palm Springs or something,
I know, but I was alive.
I must have been walking out there.
You go yeah. look at the – that is an exact – New York was ground zero for what 70s was about and felt like. And
but
this
she
show
was
is all
there. And it, so yeah, but what she I'm was, concerned she was, about were
I lived on in Carnegie Hall, West 56. Wow. It's just around the corner from – West 54th. Can you imagine? I was like right there.
But you were
right
by
a Carnegie Deli.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So were people nice though? Because Drew tends to say that people were very self obsessed and manipulative.
I was in the most self obsessed profession on earth, modeling and photography and fashion.
And
we ran the world.
Were the Led Zeppelin guys nice? Were the Led Zeppelin guys nice? Robert Plant and Jimmy Page?
I never had the good fortune to meet them, but I was.
I would imagine you
weaned,
met
weaned,
everyone.
I didn't meet. I might have seen them at parties, but I was weaned on Led Zeppelin.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm the music growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't put cigarettes out on your back or anything like.
No.
They're alleged to have done.
No. Are you kidding me?
That's what I'm saying.
Being a germophobic supermodel, are you insane? People.
Did you know Gia?
I wrote the movie Gia for HBO and lived lavishly off HBO for 5 months in New York City with Jay McInerney.
Really?
Gia. Did I know her? Yeah, Gia existed because back before Gia's time, there was only one ethnic model, exotic-looking model, that was
She
me.
Was from Philadelphia, right?
She was from Philly. So she came along about 2 years after I kind of opened the market for
exotic brunettes. Do you know the story of her?
Brunettes. Mm.
Okay. Well, she was the first junkie model.
She
was full-on junkie.
Well, wait a minute. She didn't start out as a junkie.
Her.
She's now
What's
I am.
Wrong with being a junkie?
Just a second. She graduated. It was a slow process, and you guys know it only too well. You know, the cocaine was free, and it was like everywhere. You know, models were given, you know, opportunity to have champagne for breakfast.
What she's saying, Bob, is she was a junkie, but it wasn't her fault.
It wasn't her fault. No, she didn't start out as a junkie.
She wasn't born a junkie? How'd that work?
I think you are born
a junkie. I was born a junkie.
Well, I don't know. She was molested by her dad. You know, mm-hmm. she, you know, she was beaten by her brothers. And, you
nice.
Know, she was, you know, she, and she was discovered by Wilhelmina. My agent. So mm-hmm. I knew her from – she had a rebellious attitude, but that kind of worked in the industry at the time because they were very looking forward to – I should teach this – looking forward to seeing kind of like a Pat Benatar type being rock and roll at the same time. She had breasts. Most of the models didn't have breasts back in those days.
Yeah.
You know, we later stuffed them in, jammed them in there mm-hmm. sideways. But –
Was she
time.
As bright as shiny was as
was,
it's portrayed? She was just
Google,
like a phenomenon.
Before you call her, she was a junkie model.
I
Google.
Love her. I,
wait.
This is with adulation.
Google her photographs in the beginning before you could see the degradation begin. I mean, after about 2 years of modeling, you start to model, you're a certain weight, then you get into cocaine, you gradually start thinning out. You could see it in the models today. You see, Gigi Hadid and Kendall Jenner don't look the same as they did like 2.5 years ago when they came on the scene, when they were robust, pudgy little girls, which actually registers on camera in a much finer way. And then all of a sudden, they start exercising too much. They're smoking too many cigarettes. They're going out. They're whatever they're putting up their nose or whatever they're drinking to make them laxatives. I don't know. They're all in a. Just they want to be the thinnest possible.
But then
the magazines make them that way.
But you were a big part of the 90s modeling scene and all lot of those
70s,
girls,
80s.
I know, but you were like
I was the queen
you were
by
doing that,
time. That
show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And those
What show?
Those
What show?
The top model.
Top
oh,
model.
Yeah.
So those girls were drug addicts. Like a lot of them I knew they were drug addicts.
What, the contestants on the show?
Some on the show,
well,
but some of the leading models of the 90s were junkie chic was what was in.
Heroin chic was a big thing, but not the models of the 90s. Well, you're kind of marring it with certain images. There was Linda Evangelista, Cindy Crawford. There was Heidi Klum. There was Tyra Banks. These girls are well made, still like,
yeah,
working.
Yeah, those are health and wellness ones.
Yeah.
I'm talking about.
Well, that was just like, you know, you take a picture of Gia, like, you know, somebody snapped a picture of her like crunched over and actually on heroin, and then they blew it up propaganda and they scandalized it by saying now the modeling industry is heroin chic. We were not all junkies.
So you've been around it your entire life.
Correct.
Would you say that there is a high addiction rate in the modeling profession, higher than in other entertainment
industry? I would say addiction rate is the same everywhere. I would say it would be everywhere only because
Guess who it's highest
just
in?
Just a second. Look at Amy Winehouse.
Music.
Look at Jim Morrison.
I'm not going to defend musicians. Well,
you're on the scene of music. No.
But no, there have been cases. Doctors are the highest addiction rate.
Oh, I bet.
Highest among, compared to what?
Medical professionals.
Compared to what?
Everybody thinks it's models or musicians.
You guys, no.
Medical professionals.
I'm sorry. I've seen dentists. I've been in three rehabs. I was in a DUI class with Dr. Dre and Mr. Mitsubishi. It attacks everybody.
Dr. Dre.
He's a doctor. See what I'm talking about?
Mitsubishi. Mr. Mitsubishi was grabbing my ass with his Coke bottle glasses. You know, he got arrested for driving 250 miles an hour down Sunset Boulevard in a Maserati.
Really? Mm. So just to get the public aware, a lot of times people think rock and rollers, models, all the bad drug addicts are.
Addiction is addiction.
And it's not in the medical profession or the law profession.
No,
or
it's everywhere.
It's in the
model. Americans don't believe that.
In fashion. Well, look at what they're doing to anorexic models. You know, the girls. I wrote a book about it. Everything About Me is Fake and Imperfect, because you try to aspire. All young girls try to aspire to look like Cindy Crawford, but they don't realize that Cindy Crawford has a team of about 30 people. She's got expert lighting guys. She's got brilliant photographers. She's got, you know, thank God for Botox. You know, that's costly. She's got hair and makeup. She's got, like, everything at her fingertips. Cindy Crawford doesn't wake up looking like Cindy Crawford. A cover of American Vogue with a Cindy Crawford or a Kylie Jenner will be different, because everything is so photoshopped and retouched and blown out. It doesn't look.
You know what I've noticed recently? I don't know. Really young girls get made up in what is supposedly this new beautiful fashion look, and they look way older.
They do.
Why is that?
Because of Kylie Jenner and the pop-up stores that she puts out and destroys the internet with a lip kit.
You want to look 32.
She sold over $480 million selling lip kits.
What?
Kylie Jenner broke the internet.
Little kid?
I was in Woodland.
What is wrong with us, Drew?
not me. I'm not buying them.
How do these little kids become billionaires?
But you know who does?
What are we doing wrong is what the question is.
What it is the tweens. They want to grow up to look like Kylie Jenner. Why? Because she's cool. Why? Because she dresses like a slut.
You want to know something frightening?
She overblows her lips. Wait, with 400 cc's of Botox going like this, Bob.
I don't even know who we're talking about.
One of the Jenners. Look at me. They blow their lips up. They blow them up to inner tube, epic proportions.
To look older?
And then overline their lips because they're trying to get the blowjob lips.
Yeah. Oh, my God in heaven.
So let me go back where I was about 8 minutes ago. Susan, any Facebook questions for Janice?
Yes, it's somebody who wants to know what their mom should do about managing her will so that her addict daughter, her sister, who's in jail, will be
taken care of,
incentivized to get sober.
Right. So you've got to talk to an attorney about having maybe even a hired conservator, you know, somebody to manage this when you're gone. Or have very specific sort of triggered access to money. But the problem is, you know, how do you monitor that? You know, there's no one there to really monitor.
Well,
I heard a new thing
that Shaq said. It's the coolest thing. He told his kids, unless you graduate from college, you don't get a dime.
I love that. Sure. Well, we said that too.
Even in the will.
If you don't
graduate from college, you don't get a dime.
We went way beyond that.
What did you guys do?
We had like the graduate school they had to go to.
No, they had to graduate from college.
Stages of being involved in the will.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
If they died before they were 30,
yeah.
And they didn't go to school, they couldn't have the money till they were 30.
Well, they'd be dead. Oh, you'd be dead.
No, they wouldn't be able to touch the money until they were 30, because we figured, you know, the 20s are kind of...
Unless they went to graduate school.
Well, you guys are like royals. That's what the queen established on Harry and Wills.
So this mom is concerned with that. She's concerned, I might die. I have this money. It's going to go to my child? What do I do? That's a really technical question.
Donate it to the cat.
And then she said, get tested how often, when to pay her money. Oh, I don't think money.
You can trust drug tests for will money.
No. You need to get a conservator.
There should be a
–
it's a lot of money apparently.
A conservator. You got to get a conservator to manage it, a professional.
If she wants that money, she's going to want to get sober.
This is the thing that drives me crazy.
Do they have sponsors, conservators?
No.
That would be good.
That'd be a boundary problem.
Someone should do that. That's a good business. Bob Forrest, that's a good business.
No, lawyers do it, and lawyers do the right thing sometimes.
Yeah. Hopefully it's sober
a lot of times. Sometimes.
No, a lot of conservatives have a good – you have to find the ones that have real good understanding of mental health because there are a lot of those out there that have that. And then, you know,
I bet this is a bigger problem than – I bet you that's the first question anybody's dared to ask. But
that's
I know a lot
question.
Of parents are worried about –
what's her name?
What if something happened to me and this kid gets $1 million?
I think it was Kayla.
Right?
Oh, Sammy.
Used to see it at Lost and Famous back in the day.
Sammy, if you're listening.
All the time.
Sammy, if you're listening, we're not making light of your predicament right now, but that's a really important question because I, as a mother, would absolutely think like that. I'm not leaving them like a ton of money, but they'll get parts of my legacy that is quite valuable. I think listening to what Drew just said really makes a point by finding a good conservator through an attorney.
Get a conservatorship and get a good estate lawyer who understands bad things. You know, Mark Gergos is always asking questions like this. A good attorney, they're always involved in this kind of stuff.
Where would who would you hire? Would you go to Zoom, LegalZoom? How would you find this attorney?
Find the attorney?
How do you find an attorney?
You get an estate attorney. Somebody who manages
estate.
Yeah. We have to help this woman.
Yeah.
No, but but you shouldn't be ashamed. I don't know. I just don't know about all
this. Well, the one thing
I can tell America.
Drew just said, an estate attorney.
But I'm the one that's seen what happens when you don't plan that your kids are going to get this money. I've seen dynasties spent on drugs.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And rehab. Mm-hmm. And frivolous living.
Of course.
And so these people sweat and tears, 40 years of building a business to create wealth for the next generation. They just blow it on drugs and rehab and living high on
that's
the
hog. Horrible.
Right?
That's life.
I mean, this is common.
Like you, Bob?
I did it.
He's trans. Sorry.
I tried not to, but it's kind of hard.
But that's the point. You set up a trust. You can't really trust that the addict is going to go by, you know, have any rules even when they get
So there. What drives me crazy is when we tell parents, Bob and I often do, that you need to get a conservatorship for this kid, whether you're dead or not. They need a conservator for whatever the situation is. Oh, they'll be too upset. I don't want to upset them. I don't want to ruin our relationship. Like they're going to die.
No, it's
then they're going to die.
Absolutely part
so
of it.
So don't worry about ruining the relationship.
Right.
Do what you need to do.
Right.
I just wanted to talk about the other people that were in treatment. So with Jason Waller, we saw last night. He's doing great.
Jason's
amazing.
Phenomenal.
He's doing great.
I never knew him when he was like out in the town. I used to see him around in nightclubs and things, and he was pretty wild. But I never.
How about Jace Jeremy London? Anybody? I talked to him about a year or so ago.
I talked to him one time. Yeah.
What's
he
doing?
He seemed great. He
was trying to help people.
He was doing some movies.
Did you go through it too? There's a certain stage at about 2 years sobriety, you just want to help all your friends get sober.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
it never goes very well.
Six or seven. I had so many sponsees. I had about 30, and I was like. I'm spending all my days just
trying to save
care
these
of
people,
them, and I'm depleted.
Rachel, anybody have contact with Rachel? You could tell.
On Facebook, I do.
Good, she's doing good. Yes,
I haven't heard from her lately.
She's back in New York, I think.
She had a kid,
she had a baby.
You know that.
And she, I heard
a lot,
good.
Of, lot
good.
Of pictures from the beaches. Of,
she
of
does
far
like
away
to flaunt
places.
That hot body.
And then Leif, anybody contact with Leif? Anybody?
I was supposed to play a casino with him or something.
I saw him at.
I can remember that. Did I? What happened?
Nate's shaking
Nate
his head.
Went
I don't
with
know.
Me. I was supposed to go sing with Leif's band at a casino in what's the town that they allow gambling? Gardena,
the
Pomona,
the bicycle club or something.
Yeah.
And what about Frankie?
Frankie, I think is doing. Oh, I know she's around. She's around. I've had some contact with her. It seems to be good.
Frankie, if you're listening, shout out to you.
Frankie
Leif.
Are you still friends with anybody from Celebrity Rehab? That's
just,
one of the questions
the
on Facebook. Well, besides skis,
Jason Waller,
Jason Davis. I see, you know, but I just do run into like people, and you know, once I have done Celebrity Rehab, and it's just it's a camaraderie that it's a very warm, oozy feeling because you know in 28 days you bury your soul in there, and you either get it or you don't, and you know so well. Thank you, Drew.
And I was
Eric on your season or no?
Eric
Roberts.
Eric
no.
Roberts.
Was he? Was he in there?
He was there. He and I.
He was there.
I have a tickle in my
throat. They didn't get along.
It wasn't on your list. It wasn't on your list.
Roberts and I really didn't get along because, you know, he was like when the cameras weren't on, he would call me the C word and like try to aggravate me and get me going, you know, for cameras. He just really tried to, you know, it was like really ugly. So I avoided him like the plague and he avoided me because we were just two personality. You can't expect everyone to love one another.
Right. No,
like,
no.
Kumbaya rehab. No, this and back the two to, of us were toxic.
And I'm just thinking about Rodman again. Was Heidi in that group too?
No, that was a different one.
No, but
that was Tom and
Rodman. Was she on your show?
Was Rodman in your group?
No.
It was Rodman, Tom Sizemore, Heidi.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah, that was
a hell of a... Mindy.
You know where we had the graduation because they were all so negative?
Oh, my God.
In a mortuary.
Oh. That's funny.
That's a really good idea. Funny.
And a mausoleum.
I know.
Yeah.
Shudder. And Mindy was in that group.
Oh God!
Yeah,
right.
Don't know Mindy.
She killed herself.
Oh God! Yeah, that was terrible scene.
Horrible scene.
Yeah, but like I can't believe we did this TV show and like there's one clip of Mindy having an epileptic fit, you know, and she's foaming at the mouth, and I was like, Drew, you really encapsulated like both of you guys serious stuff on television.
That's withdrawals.
I mean, my withdrawal was on the third day, as Drew brought up.
You're lucky you didn't have a seizure, because benzo withdrawals, you have seizures.
I just didn't know what was happening to me, because I wasn't on the pills, and I was walking around, and I'm sober, and I was like, oh, God. You know, and I just really meant it.
I know.
It was terrible. The
people who succeeded or are in a way better place than before we met them are the people that went to aftercare for months and months and sometimes a year.
Eric did a lot of
Davis.
Eric did a lot of
– You did, Davis. Your group was the most.
Yeah. Eric did a lot of good aftercare. Eric Roberts.
I'm starting to realize.
I never saw him at Bob's place.
I know. Here's what I just realized when you said that because I put it together. So Eric – wouldn't go to groups because he didn't want to
see Janice.
Janice.
Yeah.
Right? So probably. I saw him one on one and we scheduled him to be later in the day.
But he did a lot of good work with you.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. It was good.
And you know, Rachel kept coming back.
Everybody's got their baggage.
Yeah. Everybody does. Right? Everyone that's listening, you have baggage.
But it's something about community and attachment that sobriety
is. That's what I mean about
really
like warm
is.
And fuzzy
it's
feelings.
It's not about an event or an insight, it's about community and dedication. To that connection.
Well, where did you guys get the inspiration for the show to begin with, Bob?
Well, no, it was John Irwin came to me and I was, it's interesting. No way.
You'll like why though.
Irwin's genius.
You'll like why. Remember when they used to pick on Britney Spears and Lindsay Lohan?
Yes.
And there was another girl too. There's a third one that's kind of faded away. There
Paris
was another,
Hilton.
Oh, no. Yeah, Paris Hilton.
And no,
they would
it
pick
was also,
on them and make fun of them, and the Jay Leno would make fun of them every night.
They were like fodder for everybody
was
just
mean.
To go after.
They were children. It was horrible.
I agree.
It was the beginning of the ugliness of America.
Jamie Foxx did it to poor Miley Cyrus in the beginning.
Yeah, so I got angry about that. Watching Jay Leno one night where, you know, when Britney Spears had shaved her head, it was obvious she was psychotic.
Exactly.
She was having an episode. And just what the media did was so ugly.
And then the next night, the paparazzi was making so much money off the pictures.
I know. Mm-hmm. Well, KTLA Channel 5 News broadcast live from the place she was shaving her head, if you remember. They cut into regular programming to show a 19 or 20-year-old girl having a mental health breakdown and exploit it. For pop culture, right? So Jay Leno had a punchline about her shaving her head or whatever, and it made me so angry.
What did he say?
It was just a punchline, and then she shaved her head. You know, he reminds me of Ed McMahon. He's not a comedian. He's not Johnny Carson.
Yeah, so I'm sitting in my office.
I come in the next morning to work.
I'm sitting in my office, and he blows in. And he sits down in the seat. We have a seat where the patients sit, and I was sitting in my seat. And what'd you say? What was your perception?
We got to do a TV show about addiction.
That's exactly
what
he said.
Because America is so stupid, it doesn't believe anything it doesn't see on television.
Look at our president. Hello.
And they said we have to show how sick people are, how hard they were.
And what they went through as children.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the things that go on in rehab.
I was
stunned. We just need to film rehab.
This is
that was an epiphany moment.
But I said, Bob, somebody had approached me if you really think this is the right thing to do, I will go forward with this. And he goes like this. He goes, yes, and he jumps out. He walks out. And he goes, we got to do it. We got to do it.
But it wasn't going to be celebrities. It wasn't going to be celebrities.
No, real people.
It was going to be real people. But then what was the problem with real people? It was
we did it with real people eventually.
Not in the beginning. No one liked real people. Oh, we're such a celebrity focus.
I think it might have been VH1 was interested in celebrities, much as anything. But
you know, if a celebrity sneezes, you...
It's a part of the culture. You know, America's obsessed with fame and drugs.
But after I've done this show, I can honestly say thousands of people have come up to me and said, like, you know, you've saved my life by just going on that show. Thank you.
It did what we intended it to do.
You really helped a lot of people.
Yeah, it was what we intended
it to do. I wish, you know, if I had to go, I didn't know that much about television. Now I do. But what I would have done is, you know how you guys got the payments through the shooting of it?
Right.
I would have said the payments need to be spread out over 6 months, so you have to go to aftercare to get your payments.
That's very smart.
That would have been smart.
All right, we got to take a little break.
I would have sued you, but it would have been smarter. The great
Janice Dickinson is here. I want to talk to you about Ram Dass when we get back. All right, okay, take a little break. Right back.
Well, one of the great parts about working in recovery is seeing former patients successfully move on. And I've had patients that have come up to me years later and shake my hand and say, you know what, sometimes people are kicked out of treatment. And many of these folks move on to become mental health professionals themselves. And, of course, the field of psychology is vast. The need for competent practitioners is huge. If you're considering this rewarding career, I urge you to consider the California School of Professional Psychology at Alliant University. Now, I've known them for a long time at Alliant University. I've spoken at their past events. It was founded in 1969. It's boasts an alumni network of nearly 50,000 people worldwide. And Alliant has fostered many of today's mental health pioneers, authors, and advocates. CSPP at Alliant University hosts both on-ground and online programs in business psychology, marriage and family therapy, clinical counseling. They also offer APA-accredited doctoral programs in clinical psychology that can allow for specialization in child psychology, clinical forensic psychology, and integrated psychology. And the faculty is crazy. It's made up of leaders and historical figures like Abraham Maslow, Carl Rogers, Viktor Frankl, some of the true fathers of modern psychology. For more information, and I worked alongside of these students as well, by the way, in the clinical setting, as well as having lectured at the institution. So for more on the California School of Professional Psychology, CSPP, at Alliant, click the Alliant banner on our website or visit Alliant, Alliant.edu, Alliant.edu.
I want to thank our friends at Alliant and also our friends at Hydrolite. Don't forget them. Hydrolite, you can get a 30% off discount by clicking on the banner.
That's probably why I didn't die of pneumonia. I took that every day.
Janice on crack. DRDRWHY, and you get 30% off.
So Ram Dass, you wanted to talk about?
So first of all, I met his niece on Friday night.
Oh, really?
His niece is an agent out here.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, isn't that something?
Who's Ram Dass?
Ram Dass was the spiritual teacher. He's actually like a crazy guy from Brooklyn, right? He was from Brooklyn.
Well,
he became a spiritual teacher, musician. He had a lot to do with self-realization fellowship out in Malibu.
So there's a documentary out now called Dying to Know about Leary and Ram Dass. And they reunite them together and they film them talking to each other just before Leary dies. And in the documentary, you need to watch it because you see how severely mentally ill Leary was. I didn't realize.
Oh, Dr. Leary, I knew him. And he was crazy.
He was bipolar.
And he was alcoholic.
And it goes into that too.
Don't you think?
Oh, God. Oh, for sure. Acid.
Bob, there's one segment where his ex-wife leaves him, one of his five wives, manic as hell. The third wife, she says, our addiction got so bad, I almost died, I had to leave. And he kept going. I mean, severe. And his pupils are pinned the whole time he's doing this doc. So
might
I'm wondering if he's on
might
something.
Be.
So in any event, his severe mental illness was made apparent in that film. And then Ram Dass, I thought, well, at least the guy's doing good stuff. And
he's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Was part of the original Harvard
gang. Finish.
Just had some interesting insights from LSD and stuff. But then I thought, what do these guys really change? Like, okay, that's an old story. That's a rich kid who becomes an ascetic. Okay. All right. Rich kid becomes a monk. Okay. So, that's an old story.
Okay.
What's new? What are we going to do new? And I started thinking that, you know, hallucinogen therapy may be a thing. It may help people with certain mental illnesses. We just got to figure this out.
Should talk to Rocky.
Is he using that stuff? Is he advocating? No, I mean, is he advocating?
I don't know.
There's research, particularly in death and dying. There's some good evidence that.
Let's go see Flatliners.
I'm all for that when I'm dying, but One of the things they are working on is the Wounded Warriors are doing for PTSD.
MDMA.
And it is working. MDMA. And it
with
is
acid?
Working.
Yeah, MDMA.
MDMA.
Is that
low
a
dose?
That, what that
low
does
dose.
Is a serotonin drug, isn't it?
Well,
MDMA.
But that's not saying much.
I mean, is a serotonin over-the-counter thing that I can buy that doesn't affect my there is none.
Exercise.
I know.
Stay with exercise.
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee.
Coffee.
Sex.
My favorite.
Sex. Good. Chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, those are all good.
Those are all the good ones.
I always fantasize about Molly. And
I was a part of seeing Ram Dass. I saw him several times. He played music. He'd teach meditation at Self-Realization Fellowship in Malibu. And I was going there one time. I got into it when I had about 7-8 years sobriety. And I, because you go on different journeys, right?
Oh, I bet. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that one.
So I'm there becoming, you know, like following Self-Realization Fellowship. And I got there late on a Sunday morning and I had to park way far away. And I was walking through the parking lot and it was just Porsche after Range Rover after Porsche after Range Rover. And I thought, these motherfuckers aren't going to South Central to spread the good news about God.
But you're sort of making my point.
You know what I mean? Go ahead. So you got to met Ram Dass.
So I had been into it for about 2 years. And in that church and that day, I was disillusioned. I was like, look at all these rich people. Like, where are the poor people?
But you're living in the living in one of the most expensive cities on earth. And you're going to be
no, ready. But I think Bob's.
But I think the spiritual teachers, the real true gurus of India are going to the most impoverished places of India and asking nothing in return and teaching and giving.
Well,
and,
that's how Kabbalah got started from that guy with the center, Eitan and his Kabbalah center.
But I think the missing piece. What I was thinking is the other. Being of service to others and figuring things out for others and being
instead of an exchange.
Instead of you got to turn in a little bit and you know to be ascetic. All right.
Well, does that go hand in hand with psychotropics? Is that what you're saying? Like the
I guess I started thinking about all this because our country is so spiritually in trouble right now.
So
and I have
wrong.
To read Bob's Facebook posts every day and they hurt my soul. They're so negative and angry.
I get really negative and then I post pictures of the baby. Like
There's a good balance there.
And it just feels like, I don't know, I feel like a new synthesis is coming. Something synthetic from all this has got to come together.
I think social media
I'm
does
not sure
something
I'm thinking
negative.
A lot about it all the time.
No, but
so.
You guys are way too
How about
your
this? How about this? Steve Jobs didn't allow his children to be on iPads.
Yeah.
How about that? How about the people who really know how addictive and profound these technology is?
I'm not
those people don't allow their children on it.
I totally agree. I agree with him.
Drew doesn't think it matters.
I don't disagree with him. I just think that I'm sure there were people that didn't let people drive cars either. I mean, this is
no, but
these are children's developing brains.
But
Drew.
Going to a dinner, you can see it in restaurants. Hang on, when you see these children at the restaurants,
I get it.
And they're texting each other by having conversation with their thumbs.
I'm not an apologist.
They get carpal tunnel by the time they're 12 or 13, and then it's by the time they're 19.
You know what?
There's the art of conversation
here's
is dead.
Here's what I'm thinking. It just came together for me a little bit. I'm not an apologist for these things. Of course, there's lots of trouble with it. But I think that one of the biggest problems of our time right now is hubris. And declaring something is so is something I'm extremely, I don't want to do that unless I really know. The things I really know, and I'm happy to share that. But everything else is hubristic right now.
The advent of technology has destroyed everything.
I will just remind you that the French said that about the advent of the novel.
That's true.
When the novel was invented, it was going to destroy the children. And I just don't know. Well, I don't know enough. It's hubristic to say that's going to be the destruction.
I think it's got to be destroying brain cells.
No, I'm not saying it's the destruction. I'm saying it's creating this divisive.
No.
It certainly stops sleep patterns.
People don't know how to talk.
The blue screen.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
The art of conversation. I just said that.
But he's using me as an example. And I know. I've had these opinions my whole life.
I'm really not.
No, but I'll give you an example.
Go ahead.
I've had these opinions my whole life. I had to meet with people and or play concerts to say them.
Yeah.
I had to do human things to say them. Now all I got to do is find a good picture of Trump and say, fuck Trump. And boom, it's out there. Right?
Ugh.
That's what the whole country is doing, Drew. And they think somebody's listening. That's my funny thing. Is Louis C.K. has a good bit about being at his children's horrible, you know, this is the 8 years old ballerina performance, and all the parents are videotaping it, and he's thinking, what the fuck are they videotaping for? Nobody's going to watch it. Are you really going to sit and watch your child's 8 year old ballerina recital?
Well, it was funny.
And he said no, because he, so he talked to a dad and he said no, they posted it on their Facebook. He goes, nobody watches those fucking videos.
No. It's funny though. Funny.
Yeah, but only mothers and grandmothers.
Listen, the college football television broadcast yesterday, one of the announcers made them play back a touchdown because he goes, look at this. Look at what I just saw. Nobody noticed it. He goes, watch the guy get into the end zone, and you see these guys in their 30s, they're cops and security guards with their hands over their head making the touchdowns and screaming in joy. And he goes, look over here to the right. And over the right is a 19-year-old with her phone taking a picture of the touchdown.
There you go.
With a blank face.
There you go.
He goes, there it is.
I mean, it's become – the apparatus has become an extension.
Well, I think we're getting away from the human connection. Yes, for sure. And I think we need to –
go back to letter writing?
No, it's just our education. We need to use all this material, this technology, to really educate ourselves. We need to be thoughtful and thinking about things, because really behind all of this is a lack of understanding, a lack of education. Just even what I said about the novel. How many people know that history?
No.
I mean, that history is there.
That's because you're well read.
I think but we don't have to read anymore. You can use this thing, listen to podcasts.
You didn't really used to need, you didn't have to go to college to know a lot of stuff.
It starts with tweens, and it starts with being popular on social media. That's where it's all started.
Yes, it's a waste of time.
They can't stop. They're killing themselves over it.
I understand. Believe me, I understand. But I just – I don't know. I'm an optimist. He's a pessimist. That's the difference here. And I think
I
think a new synthesis will come out of that. I think, you know, there's a famous philosopher right now, Hegel, that said that's kind of how history moves along. There are these opposites coming in conflict and synthetically coming together. I think we're in a big synthetic mess right
100%.
Now.
100%.
And
you're
something's
so got to
kind of
right.
come out of it. And Trump, whether you like him or hate him or whatever, at least it's a shaking up, so a new synthesis can develop.
I bet you Janice has met Trump before.
I have. I stole his limousine.
But has he ever hit on you?
He did say
with
Melania at the Vera Wang Fashion
Show. Oh my God.
Those have got to be the greatest legs I've ever seen on abroad in my life.
I was shell-shocked. I felt raped.
That's who's president of the United States,
I mean,
Drew.
The guy, you know. But look how he's, like I said to Susan, walking in, Susan Pinsky walking in today. I said, you're in great shape, you know. But the way I said it to Susan, wasn't as obtrusive and vulgar as Trump going up to the president of France's wife and raising her hand when he initially meets the first woman of France going, you're in great shape.
I'm not an apologist. Trust me.
You're having a feeling of this synthetic generation.
It's a synthesis. Something's happening. Something's changing.
It's not going to go one way or the other.
You need
it's
to pinpoint
come
this, doctor. You need to be a specialist.
What if it turns into an authoritarian government?
They just went through that. I was told how to think, how to, you know. Do you hear what they're doing in Canada? They have a law coming, or they've tried to make a law, where you have to refer to people by their preferred gender pronoun, or it's against the law. If you offend them, you could not only go to jail, you could be financially encumbered. And because they are so careful to make sure that every gender is represented, they have something like 150 different ones, including 75 Z categories, like Zed, Zitz, Zaz, Zuzu, Zola, Zuba.
And Zay.
And it's like – and to make sure that even people with gender fluidity are covered.
You have to put a pin in this. You've got to explain to everybody what you're talking about, because you're going deep.
I will say, even those with gender fluidity, if they change their mind in 5 minutes and they just become a Z for a Za and you may use the wrong one, you're guilty for using the wrong one. So we're talking about how people identify themselves with their pronouns, their gender identity.
For example,
it's not just a binary
world. You can be bi.
World.
You can be bi.
No,
and
you can
you're
be they,
straight.
It, zed, za, zu, z.
This is what they're calling
them
in
that's
Canada?
That's sexual identity. Gender identity.
But
your gender. And you can have all these different pronouns to refer to your gender that are permutations on something.
Well, are you trying to tell us all something that we didn't know about you?
You didn't know about this?
About you.
Yes, I'm a zed. From now on, if you don't call me Zed, I'm going to sue you.
Okay. Well, that's how bad it's gotten.
I'm going to call my Canadian lawyers.
That's pretty bad. Well, you just raped me by saying that.
But anyway, the point is that is a kind of government that I don't want
and you
to
don't,
do with.
And you
that's
don't
why I'm
believe,
moving to France.
And yeah. You don't believe that social media and the narcissism of our culture has created that kind of thinking, rather than you need to learn how to be resilient, and if people don't like you, that's fine. Fuck them.
It's
you know
all.
What I mean?
It's I can't point at one thing and go, that caused that. It's too weird.
I can
right
tell
now.
You by being the recipient of millions of haters and millions of lovers. It's like whatever you know. Whatever is going on at the time, you know.
It's bad.
I mean, you can actually if you're not stable and solid, you can actually become so. And go into such a – what do you call it, Drew? When someone is so bullied, you know, and like subscribe –
Traumatized. You're traumatized.
I think Trump is traumatized right now.
Could be.
I think
could
that's
be.
Why
no,
he went
Trump
to the Democrat.
Trump has frontal lobe dementia.
No.
Yes.
No.
Look at the cadence
no,
of his
speech.
He's
way smarter. He's way smarter than you
he's
people give
him credit for. He's got frontal lobe dementia.
Sure.
You know, you think
smarter.
He's smart? I think he's crazy.
Frontal temporal dementia is a little bit different. But now, let's take a call.
There you go.
I don't see the name because I don't have the screen up here. Who's our caller? Give me a name.
I can't see it.
Alyssa. Alyssa, what's going on, Alyssa?
You there?
Yes. Hey. Hi. Hey, I was wondering how you feel about long-term methadone maintenance treatment.
Well, we're not super – Bob and I are both – you know, you've heard him talk – if you listen to this podcast, you've heard him go off
when
on Suboxone.
When I heard that youthful, exuberant voice, I would not want – a young person to be on it,
right.
Giving up hope.
That's right.
But I also don't want a young person to die of Oxycontin or fentanyl or whatever.
That's exactly the conundrum. And so methadone, there's better alternatives to methadone. You know, one thing Bob and I do believe is that Suboxone is a better alternative to methadone, because methadone, once you're on it, you really can never get off. Ooh. And if you're on enough of it not to do drugs, you usually have to take so much that you really can't function very well.
And you meet
well.
Some of the nicest people in town.
But if you're in stage with no hope and no resources and no family and maybe polydiagnosed, sure, if that
Wait,
works
can,
for you.
Wait, can we ask, are you asking for yourself or a friend?
No, myself. I have 23 months in a methadone maintenance program, and I was an addict for 10-plus years. So after trying many, many different things, including Suboxone, methadone is the only thing I found that works.
Okay. How much do you take?
I'm on 130 milligrams.
See, most people above 80
– I've been on that.
Most people above 80 milligrams have trouble functioning and get lots of side effects.
This is you just opened up a Pandora's box, and if you can just bear with us for a few minutes. I was on methadone in the 80s and 90s. The maximum dose you could get was 60.
Oh, yeah.
Why is it now 130?
Because it works better.
It's yeah, just, I was smoking crack and doing heroin
right.
on top
Ouch.
Of it.
That's
Not
right.
funny.
The higher dose works better. But the problem with the higher dose is you get sweating in your hands. You get asexual – you know, sexual functioning is gone. A lot of fatigue, sleep disturbances. You
oh,
have
that's
any,
my problem.
Any of that stuff?
Yeah, maybe a methadone.
Any of that stuff,
yeah.
Lisa?
Yeah. A lot of those things, a lot of them, it's kind of a draw. What would I rather? Would I rather go back to the lifestyle that I used to live? Or
right.
I
no.
mean,
no. But you can, you know, try taper.
Is there, there
really
another
comes
road?
Down to for me.
Well, the question is there another road?
Yeah. I think you need a really good psychopharmacologist to help you out with that.
Well, but she's already on the methadone now.
Yeah, but I think
what was
she
the highest
go to a
dose?
Pro.
But wait, what was the highest dose of Suboxone you were on? Per day.
I took the 8 milligrams 3 times a day.
Wow.
So that was the highest.
24. That's a lot.
You can take more, but
32 is about as much as you can go.
All right. Well, listen. Did you ever go somewhere for like a year and try to get sober, like a way in a sustained environment?
No, I never had the opportunity to. I'm on state-funded insurance, so right. I've been to many.
Yeah.
Bottom of the barrel rehab.
Yep.
And
where do you live? What state do you live in?
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania is rough. That's a rough state too.
Listen, I hats off to you for finding a way to survive with this condition and with the resources that are available. Bottom line.
Go to meetings.
And you never know what's going to happen next.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, Alyssa. Yep. That's good. Good
Thanks
on you.
Thanks for
well
calling
done.
In and
yeah,
bringing
take
that
care
up.
Of yourself, honey.
All right, who's the other caller there?
But who, Drew, I'm trying to say it was federally regulated. Who upped the dose?
I don't know. I don't know. It's
a weird thing. Didn't it have to go through all kinds of bureaucracy?
Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm sure it was the medical system, the people that run.
You know, the maximum you could get if you failed time and time again to stay off of other drugs, they still was only 60 milligrams that you
get. I don't know about this. I'm married to a retired expert in the field that probably wrote more papers than Freud did on the subject. So,
methadone?
Of all of it.
Of methadone?
He's like the doctor in the big book.
on methadone?
Everything.
Because methadone is its own thing. It's its own interesting thing.
You can get them off the record, and ask them about these things.
Okay.
Well, the only thing is that Suboxone is just a new version of methadone that you can get from a pharmacy rather than go to a methadone clinic.
See, methadone is federally regulated. It has its own sort of advocacy.
Can
culture.
I tell you a funny story?
It also has this is just kind of fantastic fantasy that it's still methadone.
Do you remember Mike Starr's detox?
Yes.
Remember his detox?
That was methadone.
That was 20 milligrams.
Oh my gosh.
Having smoked crack all the time, flushing the methadone out of his system. But let me tell you something funny about
methadone.
It takes a long time.
See, I didn't believe you, Drew, when I asked you about sleeping pills. Yeah. You kept telling me, I'm going to give you
a month for every year.
He said
you're
a month,
on it.
And then after a month, I called him. He says, "Well, I started seeing you." He said 6 months, and he goes, "I said it was after 6 months." I was like, "When am I going to start feeling better?" You said 3 years. You said I couldn't tell you before because I really wanted you to get sober.
Yeah, what I say is, let's get through the first 6 months.
Yeah.
At 6 months, you do.
You'll be better. You'll be better than you were.
Three years is a really good thing to say.
But listen, what I said was, at the end of the first year, you'll go, wow, I really was not normal that whole year. I feel a lot better.
Right.
And you'll do the same thing at the end of 3 years.
And is that the same for methadone, though? Is it the same type of kick?
It's a little different. It's a little
methadone,
different.
It's all these synthetic things are different. But let me tell you something about the methadone clinic. So in the 80s, when I first became a touring musician and I was a heroin addict and I was nervous, like you couldn't find heroin all over America like you can now.
Right. Mm.
This old junkie musician told me, just every time when you need to get dope, get up in the morning, go to the methadone clinic. That's where they keep all the drug addicts. You want to find heroin?
That's hilarious.
The methadone alleys.
The methadone alleys. Drew, just like you've been there.
Well, I've seen them.
It's unbelievable. That's where all the drug addicts in a town collect about 8 or 9 in the morning. Mm. The perfect time.
Didn't you write a book with Judith Regan? Did you write a book with her?
I've written 3, yeah.
With Judith.
Yeah.
Well, her office now looks over one of those methadone alleys.
On Hollywood Boulevard?
No, in New York. In Soho, sort of. Yeah. Mm. Allison, look at Allison here. Allison on the line. Allison, can you hear us?
Hi there. Yes, I can.
Hey. Hi, Allison.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering if I'm practicing too much tough love with my husband. He was arrested about a month ago for driving without a license and failure to appear, and he was sentenced to 6 months, but he's been using oxyfentanyl and Xanax and I don't know what else.
Goodies locked up.
Survive.
It's insane. He hasn't worked for 2 years. It's been awful. So I've detached. I told him I don't want any more words. I don't want any more promises. He has to do this on his own, and he has to get better, and I'll talk to him once in a while. I've only talked to him once in the last 5 months. Nice. I mean, 5 weeks. So I'm just wondering, is that too much tough love? Am I putting too much on him?
The only thing about I think tough love is sort of a misnomer of sorts. It should be firm boundaries, and you can only do that with the right attitude if you're going to a program called Al-Anon or you have a therapist. You have to have someone standing with you so you do it with love and compassion, not out of anger and frustration. And usually people, reject people as opposed to going, look, I love you. I'm fully supportive, but I'm with my sponsor now and she has suggested that we not see each other at the moment. You make the next 3 months, I'm sure I'll be completely – whatever it is.
Do you have children with him?
No, this is both of our second marriages, so we have children separate.
Allison, did he get the medication from a doctor, or did he get it from the street?
No.
Oh, there you go.
He across the border in Mexico.
Because that's the other thing that people don't notify the doctors and go, "Hey, you're prescribing drug. Right. If he dies, I will hold you accountable."
Exactly.
Just make that call.
I was going to say.
Yeah, and then that's that.
But now the horse is out of the barn now.
Yeah, so the
very
question
few
is,
people are on he's got those the
taste
kinds of pills.
He's got the taste of Satan inside him.
Yeah, yeah. So I think and what we usually tell people is that, you know, when they're in their disease, you can't be around them. In their recovery, you'll support him. When he's fully recovered, when he's in, you know, in a place and structured and living and doing his thing, it's like, okay, you'll be back.
You
got to
start taking care of yourself first.
You got to take care of yourself. That's right. And, yeah. And are you going to Al-Anon or something?
Yeah, I have a therapist and I go to Al-Anon.
Okay. Oh, great. So you know what you're doing.
And you don't
so
sound
where
angry.
Where is the guilt? Where is some of your concern whether you're doing the right or wrong thing? Is somebody criticizing you for being tough love? Where is that coming from?
You know what, Sonny? I think I'm doing it to myself because okay. Even his parents are they live in Vegas and they've only been down here once to see him and they refuse to bail him out. He's burnt all these bridges. I think my big concern is fear if he does get out or when he does get out. If, I mean, he has two paths, right? He uh-huh. has the let's get fixed on this is my rock bottom and I'm going to go that way, or he's going to go back to Mexico and just do his thing there. So I think my biggest fear is that, but I think it's more self, induced or whatever that I'm concerned that.
No,
I'm
I think your fear, is, your but fear is, your fear is justified that he's going to die. And he mm-hmm. could yeah. he could easily, very easily.
Yeah, fentanyl he could easily.
Yeah, and so, you know, keep encouraging the treatment that's available. Get him to somebody. If, you know, find places. Help him find treatment if you want. But don't have anything to do with the disease. I'm sorry. It's not going
to
be helpful.
You have to take care of yourself first. And that's why what Drew said, Al-Anon is really important. You know, it just it puts you yeah. in contact with other people that are walking the same path as you.
It's very scary. It's really.
You know, I was talking with a real another junkie friend of mine who's known as this survivor story like me, and we both said we'd be dead in this environment. We definitely would have died
with all the availability
yeah. of fentanyl and these high
doses. You can just overdose on that stuff. Yeah,
the death rate is. Is the real junkies too? I think I texted you that.
Lisa,
my friend, died. She's been doing drugs for 30 years. Like that's crazy.
And then suddenly,
it's crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's heartbreaking. What's going
it's like
on
out
there?
He pushes the envelope, and he can do. You know, he keeps taking this and this and this, and he adds this and this, and he's not dead, or he doesn't get pulled over for driving, or he doesn't. You know, it's like God's watching.
Does he have a license?
Like
did he have a driver's license?
Suspended.
Oh, he's suspended.
Oh. And he was driving anyways.
Where'd he get the keys?
Yeah.
Off the right question.
I'm like a cop. Where does he get the keys? You should have thrown him out or locked him
up.
Oh,
no, it's not her fault.
No, but that's the right question.
It's a family disease. At this point, it's a family disease.
Oh, the stolen car.
He stole the car. I love this guy. He's like my idol.
Resourceful.
Do I know him?
Oh, junkies are very resourceful.
Well, my dear, listen.
Wait. Facebook wants to know about Vivitrol.
Okay, hold on. So I'm gonna let Allison go. Allison, it's hard work. Make sure you have lots
really,
of support.
Take care of yourself.
I mean,
you're doing the right thing.
There are kids there too. I know, and they're they love him. I understand. It's not a easy thing to do. But anything you do actively, his disease is going to take advantage of. So just stay in the corner with the people that are there to support you. Okay.
Bob and weave, like Muhammad Ali.
So Vivitrol is
First, what's the difference between Suboxone and Vivitrol?
Oh, very different. Suboxone is an opiate with an opioid blocking agent. It's a replacement therapy. It's buprenorphine. Vivitrol is just the blocking agent itself, and it's very good for alcoholism. I've even seen it work for cocaine, and it's a shot that lasts about a month. It's expensive as hell. That's the biggest problem. Remember we had dinner with that woman that was the nurse, that was the Vivitrol nurse, and she was talking about all the good – she was going to prisons, and it seemed good results there.
Right.
And
what does it do?
It blocks the opioid receptor.
Here's what I've observed. I've seen thousands of people take it. In the people it works in, it works amazing.
Yeah, it doesn't work with everybody.
But most it doesn't. They're ambiguous about whether it's working or not.
Yeah, yes, most.
And
that's
it's
true.
Almost like psychotropic drugs. It's almost like antidepressants.
Wow, I see.
But generally, I don't know why there's not more enthusiasm for opioid blockers like naltrexone on a regular basis. Why do we have to use a partial agonist or a partial antagonist?
Because it makes for good patients.
Well, because the literature says because the patient finds the drug more reinforcing. That's what the literature says.
Unbelievable.
So I think
the side effects on all these meds and just
if you had a choice,
you know, you can't swallow, your tongue blows up, you know, you become suicidal. All these side effects.
All medicines have side effects. That's right. All medicines are dangerous.
They read it at the end. Could cause vomiting, sterilization,
dizziness,
vomiting,
headaches,
death, and sudden cardiac death.
Let's go back to Janice and her
life. We've got way down. Viagra commercial. You just see the side effects from Viagra.
Before we do that, can we? Alyssa was on the line, and she said she only had one issue with her call. About methadone was that Dr. Drew had asked about if I'd gone away for a year, and when I said I didn't have the money, he didn't give me an alternative.
I'm sorry. I am not sorry. I do not apologize. I'm sorry you didn't hear what I said. What I said was that breaks my heart, and I understand, therefore, what you had to do, and good on you for surviving in a system that is not readily available to you. You advocated on your own behalf. You found something that works, and I think hats off to you for doing so. If I could design a better treatment for you, we'd send you somewhere for a couple of years and keep you. And you're right. There's very little out there like that. There's just very little for somebody who doesn't have a lot of resources, and that's very sad. The alternatives become saving lives rather than returning somebody to full flourishing. And I get that. I totally get it.
Well, we talked about some of the things. Yeah, she's surviving and she's stable and she's employed and there's so many positives coming from the methadone. But she's also non-sexual
and sweating and sleepy and fatigued.
So these are the side effects, same as every other drug they advertise on television. Drugs have side effects.
Methadone has bad side effects. I would not.
Oh God,
methadone. Yeah. And then you can't get off once you're
off.
From how much?
60.
60 by doing heroin for a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you get off methadone.
No, but I really wish you good luck, Alicia. Alyssa, really good luck. Drew and Bob weren't being slight. He was not being slight. I'm a witness to how you can handle it.
I was being,
and we were all saying that it is really tough in Pennsylvania what you're going through.
Well, tough everywhere.
My prayers are with you. I really suggest the Al-Anon. Yeah, that's what I'm.
Allison. That's the
Let's give her some hope. I just dealt with a client who went down from 130. It took 8 months. 5 milligrams every week or something.
That's pretty good.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then he went into treatment for 60 days.
Right.
Right?
Right.
At the bottom, mm-hmm. I think they get you down to 20 or something, right?
We used to do that all the time.
So there's a way off. You just need health insurance. That's all. Mm-hmm. And so
oh, yes. We need a new president.
You need health insurance.
You need – but 60 days, where do you get 60 days of treatment? It's covered by health insurance.
Well, you get housing without patient.
Is it on Obamacare?
Housing without patient. Okay. You get like – for if you got good Aetna insurance, you'll get like 3 weeks inpatient and then 9 weeks outpatient with sober living. Mm. Right? And
still a day to day thing.
Can you imagine though? You're feeling anxious. You know what is the feeling? He described to me like he'll wake up
you're
in
out
a
of
good
your head.
Mood, and then by mid afternoon he just thinks it's a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
Like I should just stay on whatever dose I'm on this week.
I feel
he
dread.
He felt like
dread.
That every week.
Dread.
Right.
A sense of loss.
But he made it through. And he's
that's fantastic.
He's rocking along.
That's really good.
So, and that's why I say you never know what's going to happen.
No,
right?
You don't.
Even with the gal who thinks her husband or ex-husband's going to die from fentanyl, everybody thought I was going to die. I'm alive, and a bunch of people that told me I was going to die
are
dead.
Well, you're a different
you
specimen,
never know.
Bob. You really
you
are.
Never know.
You never know.
That's true.
Bob is an original.
For sure. One of my favorite people in the world died about 9 days
ago. Who was it?
Lisa, her name is. I won't go into the details, but
ouch.
But I was sure she was never going to die of drugs, right?
Mm-hmm. She overdosed.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, right? Yeah. But it started with marijuana.
But it can happen. It just
gets... No, long-term sobriety, then it started with marijuana.
Oh, dear.
So that's why I say, you don't know where this journey ends.
No, you could have gone to a Green Day concert like I did last night.
You got to change your sobriety date, Janice.
Gifting
sleep. You got to change your sobriety date.
But that's
you were high on pot the other day.
I was so high last night on pot.
But people using marijuana or using Adderall, they start on a slow, weird, the thinking goes off, and it just is slide that people get into. Even when these things have value to them therapeutically,
it
turns the addiction back on.
What do 46-year-old people need to focus on?
Thank you.
You know what I mean? The ADHD stuff.
Right?
Who gives a
fuck? I was talking about it in the car.
You know what I mean? Why would a doctor in all, without laughing, say, well, you know, you
you know,
writing a book.
I mean, everyone has it.
You're not working in nuclear
it.
Physics everyone or like curing it. Cancer. I don't think you need to focus
what
too
about,
much.
Drew and Bob, what about, like, I have questions. What about all of the, like, you know, I went to a gifting suite yesterday. Susan just, she asked me what I did yesterday. I went to a gifting suite for the Emmys, and they had a big bag of hemp oil, brownies, like some, you know, just all this stuff with it. With
they are outlawing,
and hemp oil.
They're outlawing the gummy bears.
Now it's legal, but what does that do to a body to start taking hemp oil, you know, for someone who doesn't know what they're doing?
I don't think anything, does it?
If it doesn't have, there's this CBA, the CBDs.
CBDs
and all
What is it?
Those may have value. Those have therapeutic value.
They think they have medical value.
Yeah.
A lot of different things.
What?
For dementia.
Anti-seizure.
For dementia, too, right?
They're giving them out now in gift bags.
I don't think
it's
the
chic hip thing in LA now.
Okay, that's what I'm
saying. You know what I mean?
Like vitamin drips.
Yeah. Oh, I got one the other day.
You know, a banana infused, you know, vitamin drip.
I bet you. Have you ever had?
I've never had one.
I was hooked up to an ozone therapy machine and a vitamin drip.
Oh,
why?
That's LA,
that's Vegas.
Baby.
Oh, that's Vegas.
That's how you get rid of pneumonia.
Hangovers as well. No.
But it's so much cooler to have two IVs in and you're walking around.
But so there's no
placebo.
So you cannot get hooked to the hemp oils or like all
you
these
can,
drops.
It depends.
The drops.
It depends.
THC in there.
There's some that isn't.
Yeah.
Why they would be giving out intoxicants, their argument is they give out champagne, don't they?
Yeah.
You know
same
what
thing.
I mean?
That's what I thought. You get alcohol too.
Yeah. I understand the argument.
Yeah, but you can also become an addict and die from it eventually.
From alcohol. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm.
I mean, I don't.
Well, the good news is that's one thing I did avoid because I was never a drunk, or an alcoholic. Well, of course I'm an alcoholic, but I have the behavior, but that wasn't my thing.
It wasn't your drug of choice. Yeah, but anything can be is the problem, and right. it's that
when Bob
slow
came
slide.
To my house, he was, you know, I remember Bob being in the kitchen, you know, like this with.
She had so much booze in her house; it was unbelievable.
I was like Bob. I said, people give me things. He goes, no. He's like taking the bottles like this, going like this. You want to get sober? He's taking like, you know, the Cristal and everything going down. And I'm like, it's not my thing. I have guests. He's like, no, nope, you got to do it 100%. This is Bob Forrest.
Were up there?
You got to do it 100%. Watch this. He's double fisting like tequila and champagne. And
you
I
walk
had a bar.
In her house. There's a
but
right
I,
to the right is the living room.
But
with
I had a bar.
Huge bar.
Okay, but in a bar, I entertain and. Anyway, I'm still here.
You're still sober.
Yeah.
Thank
but
God we poured
reach,
that booze
but
down.
But at the gifting suite yesterday, I didn't reach for the tequila. You know, I did take the – I do have friends that would –
the cannabis
like oil. The cannabis oil.
Well, with that whole – the cannabis story will sort itself out. It's been way too far one way for too long.
Right.
It's going to go too far the other
right.
way for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And if people will figure
balance.
It out.
Balance.
Yeah, if people will figure it out.
I don't need anything but an IV drip of vitamins.
And some Hydralyte.
And Hydralyte.
Yeah, dude.
Hydralyte's got me going for the last hour.
I was doing both.
One cup of Hydralyte per hour, I would say, will keep your serotonin level. I think this is the new answer to what I was looking for.
Optimum
right.
health.
Should we get any more Facebook
I hate
questions?
To say goodbye, but we
Yeah,
we got to
say goodbye. We
Are
go.
You serious?
The three
we'll
of us could go all day.
Next week
oh, yeah.
Back next week for episode 100.
100.
Congratulations, Drew and Bob.
Thank
it's been
you,
a pleasure
Janice.
To do your show. Thanks,
so
Susan.
Probably
to see
one
you.
Of my favorites.
Tally-ho, and away we go. See you next week in a brand new show. Right, Janice?
Right on.
Also, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, at Dr. Drew, and at This Life Podcast, drdrew.com. Check out the podcast, me with Carolla, me with Dr. Spaz, Ami Horowitz, the Howard Vortex coming soon. And the award-winning now, my Dr. Drew podcast has got an award.
Congratulations, yeah. Drew.
Award-winning. How about that?
Which award?
Podcast Movement Award.
That's amazing.
It was the Health and Fitness Podcast of the Year?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Crazy.
Congratulations. That's a big kudos.
Speaking of frontotemporal dementia, it was a conversation with Bobcat. What they submitted was a conversation I had with Bobcat Goldthwait where he described for the first time the last few weeks of Robin Williams' life who had Lewy body dementia.
Ouch.
And no one knew it at the time. And I was like, oh, my God. He told this story that was just heart-wrenching. It was unbelievable what that man was dealing with his last 6 months of life.
Tragic waste of life.
And Bob was his best friend. I didn't know that. And he was trying to support him through this. And the death, the demise at the end was really more just sort of just out of desperation. He was really out of his mind by that point with the dementia. Really, just very
I know
traumatic.
Trump has it.
Oh, my God.
Trump's got it.
Let me just promote something on the positive. There's a family battlefield addiction. I'm hosting their event with Ryan Leaf, the mighty Ryan Leaf, who's turned over a new leaf.
Nice.
The football player who went to prison is sober now and a big spokesperson for sobriety. And it's October 28th up in Seattle, the annual battlefield addiction dinner and auction. Please join us for fun, delicious night benefiting a great cause.
Sounds
and
good.
That is the moms who've lost their kids. We met them.
Yes.
And Janice, no, they're doing something positive. Janice they're trying Dickinson, to help other moms.
Yes. Where can we send people for you? To you see can, you, to find you?
Oh,
to,
just hashtag Janice Dickinson.
Hashtag Janice Dickinson on Twitter.
Instagram. Where my social media.
Where can I go binge watch those old Top Models where you just know, rip people new ones?
They're still in syndication, you know, on my TV show.
It's not on Hulu or Netflix or anything?
I'm not hawking anything. I came on the show. It's an honor to work with Bob and Drew.
Well,
I'm not
it's just
anything.
Our pleasure to see you doing so well.
Thank
and thriving
you.
It's awesome.
Your new married life.
Thank you very much. I'm in a good place.
Grandparenting role. It's
love
all great.
My husband.
Yeah. Good there for you. Go. All right, thanks, Janice.
Thank you so much. God bless.
We'll see you next time.
God bless.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.